Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. My brain really isn't ready. Okay, it's just a fact. I'm mulling over the subject of consent. And as one of the arguments, many arguments that could be made trying to describe our ethical quandary in describing what it is to be alive, and is it a blessing, or is it a curse? And clearly, I think a reasonable person could say it depends on the circumstance. Depends on who you end up being, where you're born, what happens, whether the tornado hits your house, all of this kind of, whether you get cancer when you're 10. A lot of these things decide whether you got the curse or you got the blessing. And so the question is, what do we do about a mixed bag? Can you play the game with a bag that is mixed? Where at any moment some player in the game could explode, okay, and deform you or paralyze you. Is it worth playing a game where, in a sense, there's this randomized effect where there's little control and outcomes can be catastrophic? And so I'd say just somebody reasonable would say, yes, I understand. I don't have a right to assign that risk to somebody else for my deluded perception that I'm going to be immune. So I've tried to make lots of different arguments, sort of explaining that you're never immune, that whatever happens in your life, even if you get away with having a rather benignly not tragic existence, in the sense that you don't have any horror personally that you have to experience and or have to witness too personally. Nothing you cherish is raped and murdered, that kind of thing, and you have some benign drop dead in your sleep kind of end to your story. The fact is, the story is going to continue, okay, and all we're going to do is change your name, and we're going to give you no memory of your previous existence, and we're going to say, go ahead, play the game again, learn everything all over again, and try to get away with not paying, not being a slave. And so part of the consent argument is that word slavery, and so it's kind of a simple argument to make that you don't have a right to make slaves unless you're enslaving people to some guaranteed better circumstance. Okay, so unless you can guarantee the circumstance, you can't do this trespassing thing. You can't commit an offense against somebody unless you're on a rescue mission and you're going to rescue more people than you're jeopardizing by trespassing. But even saying the word, part of the problem is that the person you're talking to, the person I'm talking to, is going to be of different capacity to know what words mean and emphasis and all of that kind of stuff, and they're not going to get the conversation. So it's almost like there has to be a point where it's like you could bring up the trolley problem, right? Famous philosophical quandarious dilemma, paradoxical problem, hard question to answer. If a person hasn't already thought about that problem and what they would do if they were faced with the problem, then they haven't had practice, okay, at doing philosophy. They haven't been tested in terms of trying to come up with an answer to a question. It shouldn't be difficult, but it ends up being difficult. Okay. So some of this is lost on people who haven't really thought about the real context of their existence and thought about it in the true context, which is evolution and lots of other factors that have to be conceded to. as part of the story, the context of the circumstance. And so obviously I would argue that a true evaluation of the process of evolution should be enough to turn off an intelligent person. It should be enough for an intelligent person to say, why the hell, okay, would I approve evolution? I mean, why would I say this is a great idea? Kill most of the kids, all right? Kill most of the organisms as children, okay? And do it as, you know, without any regard to brutality. And, you know, just so we can keep changing what the gladiators look like, you know, so we can have a year where the, you know, the skirt height is higher, and then this year where the skirt height is lower. It'll all just be almost a fad. You know, what's in fashion this year in terms of what makes you capable of surviving? Because there's a coronavirus, or because there's a fungus, or because there's some other thing, and you're better equipped to fight it than somebody else. So you just keep changing what tools the organisms have in this balance of power, in terms of you can't overpopulate, and you can't underpopulate, and you can't do all these silly little rules. And it really is circular. It doesn't really go anywhere. It just creates organisms that get more and more eccentric, more and more bizarre. And in the end, that'll probably be to their destruction ultimately, because they'll have acquired so many weapons and so many defenses that they can't move anymore. You know, that they can't function. If something radically changes, they won't be able to adapt to the radical change. So you could make lots of arguments from evolution alone that just say, why would an intelligence approve this process? And certainly in the, you know, it still works for the human condition, in the sense that our natural vulnerabilities and the natural functions are still a byproduct of essentially evolution. Optimists succeed, pessimists don't, in the world we've created. These are all just sort of facts. They succeed in obeying the DNA molecule anyway. You know, thoughtfulness will is not something the DNA molecule says, great idea, be thoughtful and careful. Because obviously the mechanism is, no, just make babies, and if they die, so what? That's the attitude. Okay, caution and careful is not rewarded. Okay, because you are just machines designed for a purpose, to be kind of used to demonstrate, you know, a genetic code, to prove a genetic code. You're just the demonstration models, and you're disposable, frankly. So anyway, there's lots of arguments from evolution, you know, that just basically say only a lunatic, okay, would sign that constitution. You know, the constitution saying we shall be obedient to evolution. Evolution is a fun and good process. Let's do more of it. No, you'd have to be a sicko. Yeah, frankly. You couldn't be showing any intelligence if you weren't very apprehensive about signing off on this system. Now, I could make this argument from things like the Olympics I've brought up. Now, these are all consensual players, but consent gets a little complicated because we don't have what's really called a great standard of what a competent adult is. Somebody competent to give their consent is also not very rigidly defined, in the sense that you could argue there's plenty of adults who are lunatics, psychotics, nuts, crazy, stupid, distracted by absolute babble and bullshit. And so they don't have any competence, because they think, you know, they're navigating with a map written by God. Okay. Sorry, having a bit of an allergic morning. Anyway, so yeah, they're navigating with a map written by God, you know, and reality doesn't have anything to do with those silly icons and totem poles and you know, ring the bell three times and an angel get its wings or some kind of crap. All of that bullshit doesn't have anything to do with this reality. So you could argue they're not competent to make any decisions. So anyway, we have this thing called the Olympics, and these people are volunteering to participate in this game, okay, of let's make one winner or, a winner and a half. I mean, if you get a silver medal, you did okay. If you get a bronze medal, you probably feel like such a fucking loser. You know, even though you won, you're kind of, I didn't win very good. it's going to be a real letdown. In most cases. And the rest are all losers, it all comes down to one day's performance and all this other bullshit, and there's all kinds of unfairnesses built into it, and now we've made it even more unfair by, indulging in some conversation about whether you can have, have a nuclear arm or something, you can have a fake arm and you can have a fake this and a fake that. And even to the genetics and, pretending that people born male are somehow now created into females that are, the real McCoy, with the same limitations, which is just, I don't know how somebody with a brain could say that's a good idea. But anyway, I mean, it's such a lie, and it's just such nonsense to pretend that you can change, whatever, your entire maturation and pretend you grew up a girl when you didn't, that you had the right, the hormones, the genetics, the body structure is not the same. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, and look, it's ridiculous to all the stuff we do is ridiculous. I mean, obviously your odds of becoming a basketball player if you're under 6 feet tall is about, zero? so why do we have a whole bunch of things where people are prevented from competing just because of a physical limitation? So it should be recognized that it's real, that those limitations are real. Dwarves are not tall people. They can't just pretend it. They can't just put on a pair of wooden sticks and, say I'm now a real 6 foot tall person. But anyway, I'm going to get into crappy subjects, but anyway, just a distraction. But I'm just saying this idea of what a competent person is just pretty much useless. Beyond me arguing that it has something to do with information and having being tested in terms of what you believe and doing reasoning on facts and recognizing that we can tell the difference between facts and fables, and nobody should believe anything for no good reason. There should be good reasons for you to believe anything you believe. Those kinds of simple rules, but we can't even say that universally. We can't even put that on a billboard without it offending somebody. you should believe what you believe for a good reason. No, people don't think so. But anyway, so it's a mess just having a conversation with the human race, because they are in all kinds of different states of functionality, I guess you could argue. How important the brain's function is versus the rest of their functionality, what parts of the brain are, functioning, on what level are they functioning? A bug, a squirrel, how much have they capitalized on this intellectual capacity to be an understander of the moral landscape, the ethical landscape, the landscape of recognizing simple things. Now, I keep using examples because, there's people here, like almost 10% of the people here, who just have a thing for speeding down little residential streets, streets that aren't wide enough for two cars to pass in lots of places because of the cars parked on the side of the street. And you know, it's not only just that they speed, there's 10% of that 10% speed at 80 miles an hour. Insane. And in cars that are so loud, you can actually literally hear them a mile away. You could go a mile away and you could tell what road they're on. And you're saying, now, how does that fucking moron, I mean, what are they thinking? People like listening to this? That people like to just, you know, be scared to death that they're going to get killed by some lunatic who, you know, their car slips on a banana peel and all of a sudden it's in their house? I mean, it's so fucking stupid. And the fact that it continues, like the people aren't in some way demanding that somebody do something about it. That the same car, you can notice it. It's the same, you know, and it's bright purple, for example. And you can see it every day doing the same fucking thing. It just, obviously there's just gigantic holes in what we call a civilization here, frankly. I mean, just gaping, gigantic deficits in functionality. Yes, obviously this person, that person isn't going to understand anything about anything, okay, that even touches on a philosophical concept, because they can't even get, I won't fart in your face. I mean, they can't get obvious offensive behavior. They can't even come close to even recognizing that. These are the people who just, sure, throw the dioxin in the Great Lakes. Who cares? You know, poison ever. I don't care. I mean, they just couldn't care less, right? They have to be so full of I don't give a fuck about anybody else but me kind of people. How can you have a conversation? Yeah, there's no point. Back to the Olympics analogy. So I could argue that if intelligent people had a conversation about the ethics, you know, whether we should sign the Constitution that allows for there to be an Olympics, right? And we're just going to say, does this survive our environmental impact demands? You're proposing to do something, and we're going to say whether it's good or bad for the human beings. Is it a good idea to include this as part of the experiment, or are we better off without it? And, you know, my simple argument would be, of course, it's just the same as saying, are we better off not establishing gladiators fighting with each other as sport, or killing bulls, or dogfights, or cockfights. Seems to me anybody with a minimum sense of decency would recognize that, why am I enslaving people or animals to that kind of horror? And I suppose there's an argument to be made that there would be people who would volunteer, you know, to be the slave, you know, to be to play the game, the low odds, but I feel like a winner kind of game. Would say this is great fun, you know. It's worth it because I'll win and I'll, you know, get the $1 million prize or whatever. So the fact that people will buy lottery tickets, for example, is not a statement saying lottery tickets are good. It's a great idea. It's a statement just saying how people are suckers and fools and imbeciles and morons. And they will do things that are to their own detriment, okay, and defend things that are detrimental to their own welfare. That's kind of obvious, based on some insane optimism bias, which sort of gets to, I could argue that was a gigantic section of Benatar's book, was just talking about the nature of bias, okay. And I'd argue it's a little bit tedious as a conversation, just because it's so circular, so difficult to point out how who's right and who's wrong. So part of the reason for this particular video is in the context of Oldpan has published a paper on the consent argument, I think, Okay, I've read only half of the paper. It's very, you know, it's like 1,648,000 words. So I, you know, a minor critique might be that it's a lot of words. You know, my standards would be is fewer or better, sure. You know, that's the real goal, is to come up with, you know, a pamphlet, you know, that does this, all you need to do. It makes all the points, you know, in some sort of perfectly efficient way. And it just, on its surface, it's just a, you know, a statement that there's probably too many words, you know. Some of it needs to be, you know, everything has a context. And so, yes, all these arguments about the right and wrongness of procreation specifically, but, you know, I would argue what we're approving or disapproving is a process that creates procreation. And it's a process that creates it in animals and humans alike. And it's whether that process of evolution, essentially, but the fact that you can create brains, okay, the creation of brains, okay, in the universe is, I suppose, the focus from my perspective, the thing that's the most important is you're creating a brain. The brain does this sentient thing, feeling thing. So that's the real argument, is that the ethics of creating feeling things are allowing a system to exist, a container, an aquarium that the little feeling things function in, and whether we can design such an aquarium or we can make rules governing such an aquarium where it doesn't get, it doesn't do more harm than good. Simple enough. That it isn't a slavery to impose it on something. It isn't a danger or a risk that's way too high. Okay, so again, we're always going back to this way too high number, which is again back to stub toes and feelings and whether you have a right to impose at all. And so again, that's another qualificator on an argument, is whether there's some line where it's a trivial trespass versus a non-trivial trespass. So it's another line that has to be drawn somewhere, where it isn't a conversation about, you know, if the only unhappiness that ever is going to happen is a stubbed toe, well, then maybe you can make an argument that the risk is so low that you can have a delusion about accomplishment because you haven't paid much of a price for it. But there should be no fooling around about the fact that life doesn't include, life goes way beyond stubbed toes. In terms of the organisms on this plant, there's very little believability, you know, credibility to someone making the statement that it's just a stubbed toe that we're risking. That the only harm to a brain is some little moment, some 14 seconds of distraction, almost. It's like it might not even be enough pain to be considered anything other than just a distraction. Yeah, so, but, you know, that's not the subject of this video. You know, it's more specific to what is a legitimate way of understanding the obligation not to trespass, that is not to make a slave, and the idea of consent in the sense that it does create at least a way for an individual to say, you know, I don't have any stake in this because they decided on their own to do it, and so now it's not my job to protect because there's nothing to protect because everything that's participating consented to participate. It's as if, it's a big difference than, you know, you could do the thought experiment with the trolley thing, and you could start playing a game with the people who are tied on the tracks were kidnapped, you know, 14-year-old girls or something. and the fat man on the bridge that you might push over is, you know, he consented to play a game where he would be at risk, okay, of being thrown over the bridge, you know. And so you can create imbalances in the equation that make it a much easier decision to make. But it doesn't, you know, doesn't change the bottom line that the obligation is that slavery is the real subject, whether you have a right to make slaves. Do you have a right to take somebody from some location where they're just fine? Now, that could be an argument that real slavery, as it took place by the Europeans mostly, some of it wasn't exactly evil in the sense that for some of these people, their destiny would have been worse if they weren't enslaved. It's just a fact. And for some, their destinies are worse. So, you know, that's the part that gets a little gummy, messy. But it's a little messy. It's not very big mess in the sense that the idea of interfering without a good motivation first, and then without much logic to defend it, in the sense that nobody in the slave trade was really thinking they were being altruistic, you know, they were saving people from horror, you know, that, no, they were making money, they were exploiting it for their own personal interest, so it isn't a valid argument to make in hindsight and say, well, they're better off, you know, their prodigy is better off, so it was all for the good, you know, we can defend it because it was all for the good, because it got people to the future faster and all of that kind of crap. And so it's okay to compromise or break or torture some minority of people if the majority of people get some victory in terms of their gain or their escape from some misery. And then we're just back to comparing diseases. Can you impose cancer on one person to cure somebody else's common cold? You know, is that a fair exchange? Is that a fair slavery or trespass? You know, somebody else is inconvenienced by something and you're going to, you know, effectively torture somebody else to save their from a minor. I mean, there's a brush fire and you're going to cause a forest fire to stop the brush fire. So you can't make much logic out of that. All right. Well, time for a pause. All right. So I was thinking about metaphors and analogies, and that's mostly what I attempt to do is draw those, you know, in a figure of speech, you know, in the brain. And, you know, play them out as, ways of understanding the circumstance. So it just occurred to me, I thought of trying to figure out a way to analogize this idea of taking somebody from nowhere and putting them somewhere and saying, is that a good idea? So my brain first thought of, like, you know, having something where you're going to put humans on Mars, but you're not going to put volunteers. You know, you're going to take people and just force them to say, oh, you're going to Mars. You know, and you're going to have to face all these risks against your survival, and your life is going to be this meager, gruel-eating horror, because we've decided it's worth doing. You know, that maybe you see an ethical problem, that people who you should be, that certainly people should sign up for this project voluntarily. They shouldn't be drafted into this silly, you know, war against the delusion that somehow Mars is broken because it doesn't have people on it. Anyway, so investment in delusions should be voluntary, sort of the argument. But then I thought about it again, a further way to illustrate was, so let's just say there was a sleeping beauty, okay, such a thing, and it's your job to decide when it gets woken up. Would you wake it up today? Would you wait a week or two? I mean, see what oil prices do, blah, 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 blah. You know, when's the right time to wake her up? You know, to have her have to function in the world. I mean, maybe Prince Charming hasn't been born yet, and so maybe you should wait 30 years because there's going to be a really great guy who's going to be born, and that'll be just great, and they can marry and do the happily ever after thing, blah, 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 blah. So even that's a minor, you know, it's a minor philosophical quandary. But, you know, is there really a great answer you can come up with? I mean, is the world, would she be better off? You know, and so it's almost like if you had a choice to shove a human being into an eon, you know, is there some place you would shove that human? You want to give them the best possible life, blah, 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 blah. So would you have them go back and live in medieval times, or would they be a cave person, or, you know, a Native American, or, you know, where would you shove them in time? You know, what place in history would you decide is you know, you're doing, it's your responsibility, like taking care of a dog or something, you're going to decide what kind of food it should eat. How seriously should you take the decision, right? Seems pretty serious. You know, it's a little more than feeding your dog, but you get the idea that it's, you know, it's your responsibility. You're going to decide what kind of life it has. So what do you do? So, like, just thinking off the top of my head, I'm saying, of course, you don't do a damn thing because the thing's in a completely harmless state. And there really won't be any happily ever after, will there? No, there really won't be any happily ever after. So all I can do is try to figure out, well, you know, in what place can I put her in history where she won't get cancer and die in a prolonged, horrible way? I mean, it's hard to imagine throwing somebody back before morphine. Right, so I mean, the past is sort of out of the question, you know, just because it was just so horrible. But the future looks like shit. Okay, global warming, all kinds of shit going on. I mean, maybe I should wait until after the mass migration, you know, where everybody moves from the coast and all the other economic crashes happen and all the bullshit. I mean, that, why should I ever live through all that crap? That's like knowing the depression is coming. You know, I mean, why would you? You know, if you were going to inject a person into existence, you know, as a 17-year-old girl, would the middle of the Depression be the time you'd throw her in, like 1929? Yes, I'll throw her right there. No, of course you'd say, no, fuck that. That would be a dumb idea. I mean, very low prospect of happiness and joy and comfort and all that crap. So, to me, there's another simple metaphor, just getting to the point that this is, you know, insanely important subject. I mean, that's what we are doing. You know, that's what the procreators are doing. And that's what I'm talking about, is them doing this thing to these little sleeping beauties. And, you know, the catch is that there's even more complications, and they're all negative complications, in the fact that it's not necessarily sleeping beauty, it's going to be sleeping ugly. And it's going to be even a worse story, okay? There ain't going to be any hope for Prince Charming or any of those good outcomes. There's just going to be lesser bad outcomes. You know, what's the least bad outcome I can hope for? Because there's not going to be any fairy tale. Right from the beginning, you're already out of luck on the fairy tale crap. It's not going to be some magical life being autistic or something. It's just, that's not going to happen. You're not going to have a magical autistic existence. You know, so those simple, you know, metaphorical, analogistic stories, you know, should give a glimmer of the actual thing you're just debating in the actual context, you know, without having to put all the complications in, without having to see all the context of evolution and what does it represent and how does it function and where is it leading? Is intelligence capable of doing anything but cleaning up our own mess? And that's about it. You know, there's no other agenda. There's no other perfect life than to actually clean up the blood you spilled by existing. You, from the very beginning of your existence, you're fed based on the theft of other things, existences and lives and welfare. The milk you drank and all the rest of it came at a price. Something had to be tortured or suffer for it. And so all you have is deficits from the very beginning of your existence. Your deficit to the biosphere. And none of it's accounted for. So I can use a simpler story and just illustrate how this is not a simple question, to be or not to be. The answer, in my opinion, is obvious, but the question is deep and profound. It's not some, well, either way, who cares? Same difference. It's not same difference. Which reminds me of the modern mystic. So he has deleted all his videos again, which is excellent. These are just horrible. I just can't understand how somebody could be intelligent on this earth and think it doesn't make any difference what happens to you. That no matter what your fate, all fates are the same somehow. I just don't know how somebody could think that's at all sensible. It doesn't matter what your brain is doing. If it's fucktarded or not, of course it matters. Arranging every thought is really, having them well ordered and connected and consistent is really important. That still doesn't save you from the psychological crap, the crap that I've struggled with my whole life of trying not to be a pessimist, okay, in terms of not being excessively risk averse, in the sense of recognizing that every circumstance carries these downside risks that you'd rather just avoid. Why risk anything for almost nothing? So if there was something that was really something, then it would be worth risking for. But it's like everything is kind of trivial and silly in terms of what pleases me, and I can recognize that it's all just some kid's Christmas delusion. Just like people think, they're lonely and they think, well, if I could just get married or I could just do that, and then they find out that, oh yeah, I give you that, and then you'll be looking somewhere else. You'll be dissatisfied again, and you'll find out that, oh, that wasn't the problem, that something else was the problem. And I think that happens with people with kids. You could make the argument that they have this delusion that it's going to be fun, then they find out that it carries with it a lot of guilt and responsibilities and shit that's not going to be fun. Problems, that are going to drag you and your mate into a hell from which you will not find a satisfactory exit. All right, take another break. There's a little too much noise in the brain. All right, back to the consent argument. All right, so let's say the Sleeping Beauty is something just found. You just find it, and you don't have any explanation. So you don't have any reason to believe that this beauty concedes or consented to being woken up. That maybe the purpose was just to be at peace, but to preserve, possibility, but with a very specific agenda, like only wake me up when the world is really perfect. But the instruction sheet has been degraded over time, so you can't read it anymore. So let's just say you have some vague indication that there were specific guidelines to when you're supposed to wake the person up, and that those guidelines are gone. And so you don't know the intent. So you have something that's at peace. It's not in a bad place. It's not in a negative place in any way. It's totally benign. Not a risk to anything. Not capable of causing any harm. And you can't restore her back to that state. So that's the other condition. You don't have any capacity to put her back in that state. Beyond the context of suicide is illegal and wrong and you can't do it, blah, 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 and so she'd have to jump off a building or something. So there'll be a price to pay for it, let's just say. So again, that's a, you know, it's sort of analogistic to what procreators are doing. They're taking something that's benign, okay, that you can't hurt, and they're putting it into the world, okay, in a circumstance and saying they can control this experiment. They will control its fate. They will provide and they will ensure and guarantee. And that's kind of the trespass, is this whole obnoxious idea that you're going to assign yourself the right to impose because you somehow have some notion that you're going to win. So I've compared this to just gambling and saying that you're going to take somebody else's money because you think you're going to win and go to Las Vegas with their money, and that you can't do that without their consent, right? You'd have to have their consent. And the argument for the consent argument is a pretty valid argument. I mean, it's a sensible pile of ethics that we aren't allowed to do that unless you're really, really certain. You know, and yet, I mean, it's just a fact that if you think you're rational, that is, there's every indication that you're a perfectly rational person, reasonable, that you're successfully, nobody's calling you a nut or something on the street, or, you know, there's some reason to think you're functioning correctly, and you have this high level of confidence, like you have a guarantee that you are going to win, yeah, okay, then you can trespass, because it's only logical to do it, because you guaranteed the outcome. But without a guarantee, without some notion that you do have this fix, this certainty of victory, everybody could acknowledge you don't have a right to take somebody else's, you know, house mortgage or some deed to their house or some other thing and gamble it in their interest. Okay, in Las Vegas, that would be a crazy for us to establish some right for people to do that, to take an authority to sign the piece of paper for somebody else and ask to somebody else. And certainly it wouldn't be legal. Like most procreators, they had a vested self-interest. So like most in the slave trade, there wasn't anybody doing this. Like you could argue the missionaries maybe, you know, had some sincerity to what they were doing in the sense that they really thought they were helping, you know. So at least they weren't disqualified by their intent or their own personal motivation, where clearly the procreators have no idea of saving something or rescuing something or doing any of that. It's about their own personal inefficiencies and deficiencies, their own ego problems that they're creating children, or else it's because they have some sort of need, I don't know, desire, okay, to play with children. They're like puppies, I guess, you know, you could, and they're entertained by it. So their agenda is to make their dog happen and stay what they think it is, this controllable thing. It'll turn out into something much less controllable. You know, something much more capable of imposing on others even. And even that should be some acknowledgement of your imposition. That, you know, your need to have children shouldn't be taxing other people's existence. You know, you shouldn't be stealing their money to finance your pet project. Yeah. And so that's another analogy, you know, to the bigger question. So you could almost use the motive, you could almost use the psychology of procreators as an analogy for procreation as a bigger subject, because it really does come down to simple things like, what's the motivation? So this is almost like any kind of law, you know. The laws about theft, you know, usually have something to do with motivation. I mean, did you intend to steal, or did you think it was yours? You could say, like, even copyright law, what's your intent? Is your intent to do something malicious with the material you stole? Or do you intend to just, you know, use it in some benign way, some fair way, fair use of the information? And again, the real, another big factor, though, is did you really just steal somebody else's stuff? Did you improve what they did? You know, all those are the real issues. And the same questions come up in why people have kids, and can they survive the motivation question? What's your motivation? If your motivation is just your selfish desires that you want to molest your kids or whatever you want to do with them, well, then you're disqualified, you know, and then you can go down the list of all the other things. Or have you any hope of controlling the experiment? Have you done anything to protect against catastrophic failures? Do you have $10 in the bank? I mean, you know, really simple, not very high lines of competency. And clearly your competency depends on what kind of environment, you know, can you afford a child safety seat? So, you know, I thought about that a moment ago when I was thinking about the lottery. And, like, even if you won the lottery, like, if I won the lottery 40 years ago, I would have spent the money so much differently than I would if I won the lottery today, right? I don't buy lottery tickets. I think it is, the whole thing is so evil. If I won now, I have a real problem, because I know that ethically, what took place for me to win that money? Well, a bunch of people on welfare, okay, who should have been spending the money on a child safety seat, or on better food for their kids, or on an educational camp, or on something else to enrich the life of their children, instead they pissed it away on lottery tickets. And their kids paid for it. Just a fact. And society paid for it. That is, other people were taxed out of being able to buy child safety seats. I couldn't afford one, right? Because you got to pay $10,000 just to wake up next year. I mean, every year you got to pay $10,000 in taxes to a bunch of child, you know, to a bunch of procreators. But the inefficiency of it, so you're just saying, well, it's blood money, isn't it? Isn't it blood money? If you win the lottery, it's blood money. You probably have killed some people. Some people died for the lottery. I mean, it's just a fact that if the money wasn't wasted on lottery tickets, it would have gone to some much better purpose, and it would have bought a stronger rope, or something, and it would have made a difference, whether somebody lived or died. Who wants to play that game? I mean, this all comes down to, I can go all the way back to my, the simpler metaphors of, can you see anything ethical, okay, about enslaving somebody to your desire? So if the fact is you have 10 people and you all want to go to Disneyland, but you know that one of them is going to be horribly tortured by the experience, would you do it anyway? And obviously, I wouldn't. I mean, obviously, to me, that's just, I don't need to go to Disneyland that bad. So unless we're going to save somebody from being tortured, we're going to go to Disneyland just to untie somebody off of railroad tracks and save them, unless we're on a rescue mission, I can't find any justification for it. I don't want to be one of the 10 people. I'm not going. So the other 9 can go, but I'm not going. And then the question is, should I just be so silly as to just say, I won't go? Or should I prevent them from torturing that guy for really no good reason? And try to stop the other 9? Well, shit, yeah, I should try to stop them. I should try to talk to them and convince them that you don't want to be one of those 9 people. You don't want to be some asshole who tortures other people to get what you want. If that's what you have to do, if those are the rules of the game, you should know you don't want to play this game. It's the evolution game. Do you want to say it's okay to, molest and kill children because what we're accomplishing is worth it? So you don't mind putting the little tickets, you have 100 kids on the side of the boat, all standing there at the rail, and you're going to just pull marbles out of a bag, and you know 10 of them are going to get these really black marbles, and you're going to have to shove them off the side of the boat. And you know a bunch of them are going to get shitty, you know. 3 will get gold marbles, and all the rest are going to get some kind of shit. Okay, some form of shit. Something that'll make them, you know, they'll eat it and it'll make them sick, or you know, they'll only get a tiny bit of calories out of it, or you know, bullshit. You know, it's just all this is just shit. And would you want to play that game? You want to play the arbiter of doom and destruction. You want to sit there and actually do this, push the kids off the boat, and then hug the 3 that are left. I mean, fuck you. Yeah, that's just too ridiculous. That's just evil. I mean, you can't understand how that's evil? I have to explain how that's evil? Jeez, you know, your brain really ain't working very well. Alright, another pause. Alright, so trying to get this back to the subject, which is the argument from consent. Okay, now, the best part of the consent argument is that the excuse that I can't get consent isn't an excuse. Okay, you either have consent or you don't have consent. And if you don't have it, the point is that you can't do whatever it is you want to do. So clearly I'm pointing out a perspective that people would have to acknowledge exists. I'm saying I never gave consent, and certainly if I could go to court and make my statement, I wouldn't give consent, okay, to anybody to create me again, okay, or to make anything like me or anything, you know. I wouldn't say, yes, I want to play some more, okay? So keep poofing consciousness into things. That's not my statement. My statement is I want out. I don't want to play an insanely silly, stupid, malicious, horrible, destructive, evil, nasty torture game, okay? I don't think torture is an acceptable price for anything that humans ever did or ever will do or ever could do. There's nothing a human can do that could ever justify torturing something for it. So I don't want to play. And so clearly that exists as a permutation. So what you're going to mix in this bowl will include the creation of individuals who state to you plainly, I didn't concede, I didn't say yes, and you have no right to force me here, and you had no right to impose this civilization on me, and you had no right to do any of this crap, to put me in this quandary of you know, having to decide whether to push Fatty on top of the railroad tracks, or you know, all the decisions I have to make. I don't have any interest in being put in this position ever again. And so the idea is that, yes, you can't get the consent of the victim before you impose on them. And it's just a fact. You can't do it. But the fact that you don't have consent is also a fact. The fact is, it just doesn't matter whether I can't reach them, I can't ask them beforehand. Well, it's still a fact. And the fact is, you don't have their consent, and you are creating victims that are true victims, in the sense that they didn't concede to be in the gladiator game. They didn't concede to play this game. And you're overtly imposing it, and you haven't any capacity to pretend you've done anything about the circumstance to prevent you from actually torturing somebody. That you're actually saying you are going to do that. You're going to accept that as a risk. That you're going to impose torture on somebody for whatever your agenda is. Your happily ever after that ain't going to happen. You know. And so it's a very good argument. The consent argument is a very good argument. So anyway, that's what Old Fan's paper, I think, will get to. And so next time I'll have read it the rest of the way through and see. But again, the only academic papers are always way too wordy. Again, Benatar's book, in my opinion, was 90% of it could have been done away with, and you wouldn't miss it much. A lot of arguments have too many words in them. I'd say some of mine obviously have too many words, because you're always trying to qualify for people who won't understand your argument because they don't know what the trolley problem is, or they don't know some other thing. They haven't really philosophically thought about any of these concepts. And so you have to go all the way to the beginning with some people. And that's going to be very boring for the people who already have been there and done that a few hundred million times. So that's the catch of conversation in this open. Anyone can be in the audience kind of manner. Yeah, it just doesn't work because, you know, again, some people are actually sitting there, you know, listening to me, and they probably already have some idea that God does exist. And it's like, oh man, you know, you're just so silly. You know, how can you understand anything in that context, that there's anything deliberate to this function, anything purposeful in creating all this psychobabble, all of this silly desire and need and dependency and addiction? How could you possibly think there's a good plan involved? That's just too insanely silly. Anyway, especially when there's absolutely no evidence and all the rest of that crap. I mean, the fact that there's just, you really think God wouldn't want to sign his painting? You know, come on. It's all just too silly. I mean, this was some sort of obviously fun, parky thing, and somebody gave it to you anonymously, that you could understand. But this isn't anything like that. Okay, this monstrosity you're handed is nothing like that. It's nothing like some perfect, beautiful, perfect gift thing. Okay, it has written all over it, all kinds of danger, toxic, skull and crossbones. I mean, it has all kinds of crap attached to it. This isn't something somebody gives to somebody without, you know, you can give somebody $100 anonymously because, you know, yeah, how could it hurt? You know, anonymous gifts that might stab them in the head. Oh, come on. Too silly. But anyway, I think that's enough of a video. And so that's what I'll say. It's enough of a video. Didn't really, yeah, I don't know. This got some good parts in it. I mean, some parts I invented, you know, right in the video, so that's good. It's still too scattered, an argument, and so we have to tighten it all up. But anyway, working on it. Blah, 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 blah. So, till the next time, and such, and so forth. And whatnot.